Has the feedback to this,
Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 241, and it's May 19th. And guess what? This is your last class. But you do have one more class, or you do have to come to the campus one more time because you want to get all those course points, right? Which will be available on Thursday this time. But also, don't forget there's an online quiz Thursday at 11 p.m. that's due. And probably you should have that done already because that will help you with the lecture exam. All right. So let's take a look at the schedule, but I just talked about the schedule, probably not so interesting, except I didn't say what chapters are on the test, but you all know it's 14, 16, 17, and 20. And for 20, you have that one reproductive system diagram that shows the profiles of LH, FSH, estrogen, progesterone, and that's an extra credit drawing for today's lab. And I know it's only 1 point, but so you get 1 point in lab, but you'll probably get a whole bunch more points in lecture if you understand that diagram, right? So the magic happens for the lecture exam, not so much for lab. Okay, and then end of chapter questions. So, and I think we're going to go over some of that stuff today, and maybe I'll embellish some of those questions with some PowerPoints from your textbook. And I did upload all the PowerPoints for Chapter 20. I didn't edit them. I didn't select which ones were important or not important. And there's 105 of them. And that's only because a student or a couple students asked me to put those PowerPoints in Blackboard for you to download. And if you want to look through them real quick, maybe that will help you, maybe not. I'm not so sure. But I'm not asking you to look at all of those PowerPoints. Right? They're just there because that was a request. Special request. Okay, so chapter 14, 16, 17, 20. Hopefully we'll start right at whenever the class starts, which is what, 11:20? We'll kick out that astronomy class, get started because there's a micro class after hours. So we'll get started. So if you're ready to take the exam on Thursday, come on in. But if you need to study a little bit while longer, stay out in the hall because as soon as you come in, I want to give you a test so you can start it, right? And well, I'll try to, and if I can start the test before 11:20, I will, right? If that astronomy class, maybe they're done, I'm not so sure what their schedule is, right? So if you got a little extra time, that would be fine with me. And is there a question on the schedule? No. Picture ID, eraser, pencil, Scantron that isn't all mutilated, and you've got to make sure that you don't have any smudges on your Scantron. Make sure Scantron is nice and clean because you won't have a chance to look at it until, I don't know, maybe way in the middle of summer or fall next time. And how long do I give you to review for a test? 2 weeks. So I don't know how that corresponds with looking at your test in fall. But anyway, just make sure you don't smudge up your Scantron. And please put your Scantron in the proper lab section, because that slows everything down and everybody wants their grade right away. All right? And so keep your thinking straight when you put it there. And make sure you bring your picture ID, right? Because otherwise you got to show me. And if you can't show me till fall, then I won't be able to post your grade until fall. So bring all of that good stuff right with you, like you all know that you should be doing. All right, so that's it. Oh, and then I'll grade. So this is going to be Thursday. Okay, then I got some more tests to give on Thursday. And then it's Memorial Day weekend. If it's nice weekend, I probably won't be inside grading. I'll probably be outside someplace, which means I'll finish up grading on Tuesday. All right, so if I get it done early, I'll put it on Blackboard for you, but it might not be until early next week. All right, that's just the way it goes, okay? All right. And don't forget, you got lab afterward, and I probably won't get all the lab scores from the instructors until next week anyway. Right, and I can't put your final grade in Blackboard because the class isn't over until Thursday at 11 p.m. anyway. Right, so that's the deal with that. Okay, so last time we were looking at a really important figure. And let's see if I can find it. You can answer a lot of questions in Blackboard by looking at this figure. Make sure you can draw it out. And it's going to be female reproductive system. Right, female reproductive system. All right, as I find it, what's the primary reproductive organ in the female? Yeah, so here you have nice ovary. Right, so the job of the ovary is twofold, is to produce gametes, like this oocyte right here, and also what's the second function of an ovary? Yeah, to secrete hormones. And what kind of hormones are we interested in knowing about? Okay, from the ovary. Let's think about that. Yeah, we got to get that straight. Progesterone and estrogen. Right? And so when you look at, this is the whole thing right here. Okay, so when we look at this illustration right here, let me pull it up just like that. I got to get my cursor before I go nuts. Arrow options. All right. Okay, let's put it on both screens like that. Okay, so there are two cycles that you have to be aware of. One is the ovarian cycle, and the other is the uterine cycle. It's kind of misnamed on this illustration because it says menstrual cycle. That's the same thing as uterine cycle. And probably if we're going to talk about a cycle that happens in a structure, namely an ovary, we should talk about a cycle that happens in another structure, and that is a uterus, right? But commonly it's called the menstrual cycle. And so you got to know where all these hormones are coming from. We mentioned that one of the functions of the ovary, or you guys told me, was to produce hormones, right? And I see four hormones here, LH, FSH, estrogen, and progesterone. And when you look at this graph, it should be really obvious, okay, where estrogen and progesterone come from. Okay, the pointy end of these arrows are pointing to the uterus, which means the uterus isn't secreting these hormones. They are coming from the ovary. Right? And in particular, what is going to be secreting estrogen in the ovary? You got to know that. And I see increasing estrogen, right, during that proliferative phase of the uterine cycle. What is getting bigger in the ovary during the proliferative phase? The follicle, the maturing follicle, right? So maturing follicle releases estrogen, and it's directly related to the size of the follicle, just like that. Progesterone. Does progesterone come from a follicle? It does not. Where does it come from? Yeah, the corpus luteum, right? And the corpus luteum is what's left over after ovulation, right? And the corpus luteum is in what organ? Where do you find a corpus luteum? I heard uterus, but I'm glad we're going over this because it's not really uterus. Okay, it is in the ovary. Yeah, corpus luteum is in the ovary, right? Because that's where a follicle is. Follicle is in an ovary. After ovulation, you're left over with a corpus luteum. Corpus luteum is still in the ovary, and then it regresses if implantation does not take place. All right, so estrogen from a developing follicle, progesterone from the corpus luteum. Now, what about LH and FSH? Where do they come from? Maybe you should draw this out. I don't know if you have a piece of paper. Go ahead and maybe draw this out. Maybe you have this in your mind, or maybe you have this drawing. So you should draw something in right there, namely the anterior pituitary, right? So FSH and LH come from the anterior pituitary. And what controls the release from the anterior pituitary? Yeah, and where does GnRH come from? The hypothalamus, right? And it gets to the hypothalamus through that hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal blood vessel, right? It doesn't come down the tract. That's the posterior pituitary. And we're going to maybe look at that. Oxytocin is from the posterior pituitary. I want to show you a slide, and there's another hormone called inhibin, and that comes from the male reproductive tract, and it inhibits, right, the production of LH in the male. But I don't have inhibin here in the female, and probably no other female in here does either. Right? But that's a hormone in the male reproductive tract. All right, so what is the hormone from the hypothalamus that controls the release of FSH and LH from the anterior pituitary? Yeah, and that was on one of your tests before, right? That was a really easy diagram to label on the test, GnRH, for FSH and LH, right? Follicle-stimulating hormone stimulates the follicles, LH, right, stimulates the corpus luteum. Is that true? To a degree it is. It has LH receptors, but more importantly, if you're going to tell me what the role of LH is. Is that it? Yeah, right. It spikes right before ovulation, so we can say that it causes ovulation. Okay. So you have a number of questions in your end of chapter, right? 1, 2, 3, and 4. You have menstrual phase, follicular phase, luteal phase, and ovulation. And these are going to be really easy for you to answer, because you're going to look at this graph right here. All right, so what are the, we got two phases for the ovarian cycle. The two phases are follicular and luteal, and in between is ovulation. Okay, and in the uterine cycle, we got three phases. We got the proliferative phase, controlled mostly by estrogen, right? And then the secretory phase, can't quite see that, but this has got to be secretory phase, mostly controlled by progesterone and estrogen to some degree, right? And then the third phase is when progesterone and estrogen start to decline, then we have menstruation. Okay, so you could consider uterine and ovarian cycles as having three parts, and think of ovulation as maybe a phase of the ovarian cycle. All right, so far, anybody have a question about this particular figure? Nice. All right, so we got menstrual phase. What is it characterized by? You got high estrogen and progesterone, low FSH and LH. You've got low estrogen and low progesterone. You got LH surge. How about LH surge for menstruation? I wouldn't go along with that because that's ovulation. Increasing estrogen, low LH, and low progesterone. Increasing estrogen is the clue right there. That's not it. So correct answer would be low estrogen and low progesterone. And we see decreasing levels of progesterone and estrogen, right? And that's going to be a trigger signal for menstruation. And then you should know what happens during menstruation. Then the functional layer of the endometrium, right, is shed from the body with this mild hemorrhage as well. All right, what's another one? We've got follicular phase. What's happening in follicular phase? We've got, how about increasing estrogen? That's probably pretty good. Okay. Proliferative phase. Oh, no, I got follicular phase. Sorry, follicular phase. Here, follicular phase. Okay. Follicular phase, we've got high estrogen and progesterone, low FSH and LH, low estrogen, LH surge, no, increasing estrogen. Yep, increasing estrogen and low LH and FSH. That's it. So increase. So that characterizes the follicular phase. Kind of a funny question because the question sort of implies that an increasing estrogen is causing this follicular phase of the ovarian cycle. But what is it really? It's the follicular phase that is causing, yeah, an increase in estrogen. It's really the other way around. All right. So, but that's okay. Luteal phase. Here's luteal phase. What do we got? Increasing and then decreasing. Okay, so increasing estrogen, low LH and low progesterone. Don't like that. Low estrogen. High estrogen and progesterone. Oh, yeah, so here we have high estrogen and progesterone. These are early. And then low FSH and low LH. That's it. So increasing high levels of progesterone and estrogen. Okay, so there is something that's sort of interesting that I see here. As estrogen and progesterone increase, what do you see happening with FSH and LH? Yeah, they're decreasing, right? And I think you should see that there is a negative feedback mechanism there operating on the hypothalamus so that when estrogen and progesterone increase, the hypothalamus recognizes that and cuts back the amount of GnRH that is released, which then cuts back FSH and LH, and that just helps maintain the proper levels of progesterone and estrogen. That's a nice negative feedback mechanism. So that if somebody takes exogenous estrogen or progesterone, that means if they take an estrogen or progesterone pill, what happens to FSH and LH levels if it operates in a negative feedback mechanism? Okay, if somebody takes estrogen and progesterone, what happens to LH and FSH? Yeah, it decreases, right? And FSH and LH decrease, what happens to this follicular phase of the ovarian cycle? Okay, then it stops, right? Because you need FSH, right, in order for this follicle to mature. All right, and so what is that the basis of? That is the basis of some agents women take to control fertility. That would be that birth control pill, right? Because of that negative feedback working with the hypothalamus. And I think there was a question, at least maybe in the current edition of your textbook. All right, but the birth control pill doesn't have constant levels of estrogen and progesterone, because if there are constant levels of estrogen and progesterone, what could you tell me about menses or menstruation? It doesn't happen, Okay? And so that would lock the uterus in this constant state of being ready for implantation. That would not be healthy. So women take a placebo pill just to make sure they count the days properly. The placebo pills at the end of their cycle don't contain progesterone and estrogen. And what is that a signal for? The normal cycling of the uterus, right? Okay. Because when they stop taking estrogen and progesterone, well, that's the signal for menstruation. Okay. Ovulation is the next one. Ovulation, surgeon LH, which is your answer right here. Okay, so we talked about birth control pill, negative feedback to the hypothalamus for estrogen and progesterone. So if estrogen and progesterone are high, what happens to the ovary, in particular these follicles? Okay. Are these trophic hormones? Are these hormones that are going to cause things inside the ovary to grow and mature? Okay, are these trophic hormones, like GnRH, for instance? GnRH is a trophic hormone, right? It goes to the anterior pituitary, causes the production of LH and FSH and the secretion of those compounds. Okay, but what about estrogen and progesterone on the ovary? It's going to cause regression of the ovary, right? Because it's going to suppress LH and FSH secretion from the anterior pituitary. All right, so let's think now, instead of female, let's just think about male for a second. This is sort of interesting. And I think this even happens in female athletes to some degree as well. All right, male athletes do like to take some chemicals to increase their muscle mass. Anybody familiar with any of these things? Hopefully not. Anabolic steroids, all right? Anabolic steroids like testosterone, for instance, okay? Or maybe some other analogs of testosterone. And we see right here, estrogen and progesterone causes a decrease in FSH and LH, and there's a similar effect in males. If somebody's taking exogenous testosterone, what happens to GnRH secretion in the male? It goes down, right? And if GnRH goes down, what happens to FSH and LH in the male? It goes down, and then what happens to the testes? They shrink too, right? They shrivel, right? So it's kind of ironic that you might see a male athlete with big, huge muscles, but what do they have? They also have some corresponding little raisinettes, right? Instead of functioning testes. So if anybody's thinking about messing around with that to build muscle mass, I'm not quite so sure that's exactly what you would like to do. Okay. Okay, so there's a lot on this diagram that you can appreciate. Okay, so what else do I want to say about that? Let me read through some of these other questions really quick. Okay. All right, so here's a good one I didn't mention. Corpus luteum. Here's a question, number 10. Corpus luteum is maintained for the first 10 weeks. I think in lecture I said 5 last time, but here it says 10 weeks. The corpus luteum is maintained. Here's that corpus luteum for the first 10 weeks of pregnancy, because usually the corpus luteum degenerates, right? But it's maintained when implantation takes place so that the endometrium is not lost. That maintains pregnancy. So there is something that comes from the placenta to tell the corpus luteum not to regress. And that answer right here, human chorionic gonadotropin. Okay. And you could probably say something like LH, but human chorionic gonadotropin is even better. So talking about that placenta, question number 12. Placenta is formed from, this is a really interesting organ, right? It's part fetal tissue and part maternal tissue. Why do I think that's kind of an interesting combination? Because here's an organ. What about all the organs in your body? Where do they come from? You or somebody else? Yeah, they're all you. Okay, but here's a placenta. Where does it come from? Comes from two people. That's the only organ I know that actually is derived from two people, right? From maternal cells and fetal cells. So the answer to that is what? The fetal chorion and maternal decidua basalis. So from those two different layers. Yeah, both of those. Okay, if GnRH, here's question number 15. If GnRH were secreted in large amounts, oh, it's not shown on this slide right here, but if it's secreted in large amounts and at a constant rate rather than pulsatile, which of the statements would be true? All right, so what's important about hormone secretion? It should be pulsatile, right, so that things are not down-regulated, okay? So if secreted in large amount and constant level, one answer would be LH secretion would increase indefinitely. All right, so this is just a constant GnRH. I don't like that. Testosterone secretion in male will continuously be high. Don't like that. Estradiol in female would be continuously high. Don't like that. Correct answer would be LH secretion will increase at first and then decrease. Okay, because normal conditions, GnRH is released in a pulsatile fashion. The contents of a birth control pill, almost the last question. Okay, contents of a birth control pill inhibit secretion of gonadotropins. Yeah, because of negative feedback. Well, then the next question is, exert negative feedback on the hypothalamus. That is true. Oh, we're looking like it might be all the above. It prevents ovulation. Yes. Right, and it maintains the endometrium. Okay, well, if one is not really astute as to what's in that birth control pill, you might want to say yes for D. All right, so the correct answer would be all of these, but remember, toward the end of the cycle, a woman is taking a placebo pill. So there is a decrease in estrogen and progesterone, right, which then causes menstruation. So that question is mostly right. Oh, here's one I haven't read over. Let's take a look at it. It has something to do with progesterone. Which of the following statements about progesterone is false? Progesterone is secreted by the corpus luteum. True. Progesterone is secreted by the placenta. It is true after 10 weeks. It is true after 10 weeks, right? But not until then because the placenta is releasing HCG, so the corpus luteum doesn't regress. Okay, which one is false? So far, I like A and B as being true. Progesterone decreases the basal body temperature. Okay. Okay. And progesterone secretion drops toward the end of non-fertile luteal phase. Well, that's true. So the correct answer, because it's false, is progesterone decreases basal body temperature. What does it do? It increases body temperature slightly. Okay. Kind of hard to detect, but over many measurements, you could probably tell. Okay, so that is pretty good for this figure right here. So I want to go all the way back, maybe to the beginning. I drew this slide last time on the board. Okay, so we saw that the primary reproductive organs in the male are testes, ovaries in the females. And both have two functions, to secrete hormones, but also to produce half-human cells. Those half-human cells are called gametes, right? And a normal human cell has 46 chromosomes. A gamete is what we call haploid. It only has half the number of chromosomes. So the male gamete is sperm, female is an ovum. When these two join together, we call that fertilization. That single cell is called a zygote, right? And then the zygote grows by, what's a process by which you replace old and damaged cells or grow? It is mitosis, okay, and that brings us back over here. So what's the difference between male and female? Okay, so we have 46 chromosomes, all right, and there are actually 23 pairs, okay, so 23 chromosomes from dad, so these are the maternal chromosomes from mom, and paternal chromosomes from dad. 22 of these pairs are what we call autosomal. And the autosomal chromosomes have the identical shape, they have the identical locations for genes that control attributes on somebody's body. They have the same shape. But there's one pair that we call sex chromosomes. They have different shapes. They have different kinds of genes depending on which one they are. And there are two of them. It can be an X or a Y chromosome. And I think one of these next slides, well, right here. All right, so here we have not autosomal chromosomes, and you could tell because an autosomal chromosome, you would have both exactly the same size. You would have two large ones or two small ones, right? Okay. And what is this? Here is the X chromosome, and here is the Y chromosome, this little dinky one over here. All right, and it just so happens that if you have two X's, you are female, that's right. And if you have an X and a Y, you are male. Okay, and so this Y chromosome over here doesn't look like it contains many genes, but it has some really nice complexity that helps the development of the male reproductive tract, but it is missing thousands of genes that we have on the X chromosome. All right, so what do I always like to point out to here? That women should be really sensitive to the plight of males because they're missing so much of this chromosome right here. And I never hear that anywhere in the news or anything like that. But of course, you should be aware of that. Like for instance, what are some genes that the X has that the Y does not have? Probably you all know this, but I think I just want to review it. One thing that kind of stands out, okay, especially in my particular condition, and that is color blindness, right? So normal color vision is contained in a gene way out over here someplace, right? And you can have a recessive, right, or dominant, and the recessive one will be for color blindness. But since there is no corresponding gene on the Y, right, males only need one colorblind gene, not two, to express that particular condition. Okay, so that's one thing about these chromosomes. And there's other sex-linked traits as well. All right, so what kind of chromosomes are these? Autosomal or sex? Sex, you said that so quietly. Yes, they're sex chromosomes. Okay, so okay, so what do we got? Females, XX, males, X and Y. Okay, and I think you had a couple questions here. A person with the genotype, XO, okay, XO genotype. So genotype, okay, genotype, phenotype. So it's asking a person with these genes, XO, what are they going to have? Okay, well, they don't have a Y. Right? And if they don't have a Y, they're going to end up with ovaries. Because the Y chromosome is necessary to express male secondary sex characteristics.
But that's the
theoretical thing. Yeah, at least it is in this one. I think it is.
In ours, it's XXY.
Yeah. Oh, XXY. Okay, what's it? A person with XXY? Will it be an endogenous? I don't know. XXY.
An individual with an XXY genotype is a female, true or false?
Because there's a Y chromosome, and if you have a Y chromosome, then you're going to be a male. Yeah, regardless. Because it secretes certain factors. Yes. And that, so you could be XXXXXY. And you'd still be a male. Okay. An embryo with genotype XX develops female accessory sex organs because, what does the XX? Lack of androgens.
Yeah.
Right? So androgens are necessary to express the male secondary sex characteristics. In the male, FSH is not secreted by the pituitary. That's not true. Okay, FSH is always secreted by pituitary. FSH receptors are located in Leydig cells. Leydig cells are? Where are Leydig cells? Inside the seminiferous tubules, outside? Oh, Leydig and interstitial cells are the same. So they're outside the seminiferous tubules, right? And so their job is to secrete testosterone. And FSH in the female is important for development of a follicle, but what is FSH in the male? It is for spermatogenesis. Spermatogenesis takes place inside the seminiferous tubule, not outside. All right, so these cells are outside, so I would say no, I don't like that one. Okay. FSH receptors are located in the spermatogonia. No. FSH receptors are located in Sertoli cells. So here we got a comparison. Leydig, in the interstitial spaces, Sertoli cells inside the seminiferous tubules, right? So Sertoli cells are important for spermatogenesis inside the seminiferous tubules, and that's what FSH is for. What hormone does stimulate Leydig cells in the interstitial spaces? Yes, the Leydig cells secrete testosterone, and those Sertoli cells need testosterone as well as FSH to work. Okay, let me find this particular slide. Has to do with inhibin. Ah, look what we got right here. Okay, so here's a question. Which of these statements is true? Is that the one I want to... Oh, no. The secretion of FSH in the male is inhibited by negative feedback. Oh, all right, so let's look at this scheme. We've got hypothalamus. Hypothalamus releases GnRH. That goes to the anterior pituitary, causes the release of FSH and LH, right? We have these two gonadotropins, and these are tropins. Why are these trophic hormones? Because, yeah, they make the gonads grow and secrete, right, and in two different ways, both for hormones and for gamete production. So FSH and LH go to the gonads, right, and that produces gametes as well as hormones. And it just so happens that sex steroids, for instance, testosterone in the male, can feed back to the anterior pituitary and cause the decreased secretion of LH, can go back to the hypothalamus, decrease the secretion of gonadotropin-releasing hormone, but not necessarily FSH. There's another hormone that comes from the gonads, goes back to the anterior pituitary, affects a negative feedback mechanism that decreases FSH, right? And that's inhibin. Now, these sex steroids are, well, steroids, so they're lipid. This inhibin is actually a water-soluble hormone. It's a protein. So let's see, where was that question at? The secretion of FSH in the male is inhibited by negative feedback effects of inhibin secreted by Leydig cells. And the answer, well, Leydig cells are in the testes, right? But inhibin doesn't come from the Leydig cells. It comes from the tubular cells, right? Testosterone secreted by the tubules. Is secretion of FSH inhibited by testosterone? Testosterone will affect luteinizing hormone, LH, but not FSH, so I don't like that. Testosterone secreted from the Leydig cells. And then still, no. And as a matter of fact, testosterone is not secreted from the tubules. It's from the interstitial spaces. The correct answer there would be inhibin secreted from the tubules, right, that work in a negative mechanism on the anterior pituitary. Okay, to mean proper levels of FSH. All right, so this is not an exam figure, but you should probably know where this inhibin is located. And in what gender do we see this? In males, right. Okay. Okay, so here is just some knowledge tidbit. Fertilization normally occurs in the fallopian tubes. Fallopian tubes. Okay, we talked about the placenta, uterine contractions. Ah, okay, we're going to look at that. Maybe right about now. I think we could use a few more slides right here. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. Okay, let's take a look at this. Labor and parturition. All right, so how is homeostasis normally maintained in the body? Negative feedback mechanism, right? And I think we've looked at a couple of positive feedback mechanisms. Does anybody have any oxytocin and who? Okay, well, I don't know. We haven't talked about a couple of these things, but we're going to talk about them now. All right, well, one, we talked about what? An action potential, right? For instance, when a sodium channel opens, it causes depolarization. As the membrane depolarizes, that opens more sodium channels, which causes more depolarization, which opens more sodium channels. All right, and how come the whole universe isn't just made up of sodium channels that are open? Because you'd never be able to relax. But don't forget the inactivation gate closes when there's a certain level of depolarization already taking place. Okay, so that is a positive feedback mechanism. So let's take a look at this. We have three locations here. We have the fetus. We got this nice pituitary. We got adrenal cortex in the fetus. Then we have the placenta, which is a combination of both fetal tissue and maternal tissue. And then in this column over here, we have things that are happening in the mother. Okay, so let's take a look at this. What starts this? Well, parturition or labor is controlled by the fetus. It's not controlled by anything. The mother helps, but it's not really controlled by the fetus. So here we have corticotropin releasing hormone, right? That's a releasing factor going to the anterior pituitary, which releases ACTH, right? That goes to the adrenal cortex, and that releases cortisol. And when is cortisol secreted under normal circumstances? What kind of conditions will cause stress? Exactly right. So stress. So when is the fetus stressed? Yeah, when it's big and doesn't fit inside the uterus anymore, right? So as it gets constrained or constricted, it's going to secrete cortisol. All right. So what are the effects of cortisol? Ah, wow! I can't read the slide. Let's see if we can go like this. Okay, so cortisol then goes to the placenta, and it causes the release of some prostaglandins, right? And it causes the release of placental corticotropic releasing hormone, right? And so what do we have over here? When the placenta releases placental corticotropic releasing hormone, normally it comes from the anterior pituitary, right? So this placental CRH goes back to the adrenal cortex, causes increased secretion of cortisol, right, which goes to the placenta, causes an increased release of CRH, which causes an increased secretion of cortisol from the fetus. So what kind of mechanism is that? That's a nice positive feedback mechanism. All right, so remember, they can't last forever. Something drastic has to happen for this to stop. Otherwise, the whole universe would be filled up with cortisol, and it's not. All right, so cortisol also has an effect on the placenta to release prostaglandins, a couple of them, right? And it increases gap junctions, right, in the myometrium of the uterus. And what the heck is a gap junction? Yeah, so it's a synapse. It's a special synapse, so it allows these smooth muscles all to communicate with each other. So if one cell depolarizes or becomes excited, what happens to the whole uterus? It all depolarizes or becomes excited. Okay, so these prostaglandins, right, just make the uterus more irritable, more contractile. And then what happens to the fetus when that happens? The fetus becomes more stressed, right? And what I don't see right here is another nice positive feedback mechanism, right, feeding back to the hypothalamus within the fetus, which causes more ACTH, more cortisol, more prostaglandins, which causes more contractility of the uterus, which then feeds back, another nice positive feedback mechanism. Okay, the adrenal cortex also releases a steroid, yeah, DHEAS, which can be converted into an estrogen-like compound in the placenta, and this estriol also increases gap junctions. And it also increases receptors for oxytocin. And oxytocin is a powerful, smooth muscle stimulant. And so that causes the uterus to to contract because of these increased oxytocin receptors. And that causes more fetal stress, which feeds back to the fetal hypothalamus. So here are a number of positive feedback mechanisms, which then cause delivery, parturition. And it's mostly controlled by what? Fetal stress. So it's a fetally controlled process. Okay, what can I say about this oxytocin? All right, somehow I think there's a loop that's missing right here. I think there's something that feeds back to the maternal hypothalamus, which increases oxytocin, which feeds back again. So there's another positive feedback mechanism within the mother as well. And I think it has to do with cortisol, the fetal cortisol. All right, so what stops all these positive feedback mechanisms? It is? Yeah, then delivery, right? And so then this positive feedback mechanism stops. So here is the question. Where is the question? Uterine contractions are stimulated by? Okay, so I see prostaglandins, oxytocin, right? And even estriol, but what do we have? The answers are oxytocin, prostaglandins, and prolactin. So all of those except prolactin. Okay, so that's easy to see. Contraction of mammary glands and ducts during milk letdown reflux is stimulated by oxytocin, which is a smooth muscle stimulant. And do I have a picture of that in here someplace? Right here. No nice positive feedback mechanism. But that is another example of positive feedback. Okay, so prolactin is necessary for development of mammary glands during gestation. Okay, but that's not responsible for milk letdown reflex. Okay, and what's not shown on this slide? Oh, maybe this is good. Oh, here. All right, so if there is a mature, competent breast that can produce milk, right, that happens during gestation as a result from prolactin and as well as estrogen and progesterone. Okay, but here is the milk letdown reflex. So it's a reflex, always starts with a stimulus, ends in responses, right? So the stimulus is a tactile stimulus on the breast, right? And here are the afferent pathways into the hypothalamus. Hypothalamus is connected to the pituitary, right? And the posterior pituitary releases oxytocin, which causes contraction of the ducts of the milk glands that causes, milk ejection, milk letdown reflex. Okay, now what's not on this slide right here is if there is a nursing infant and there's milk on the breast, what's the attitude of the infant? Does it fall asleep or is it interested? It's interested, right? So that increases tactile stimulus on the breast. So the infant increases suckling, right, which then goes back to the hypothalamus, causes an increase in oxytocin, which increases suckling, right? So what kind of mechanism is that? That's a nice positive feedback mechanism. And then what stops this positive feedback mechanism? How come the whole universe isn't filled up with breast milk? Okay, because the breast only has a finite capacity to produce milk, right? And when the breast has reached its limit, what happens to the suckling stimulus? Well, the infant loses interest, falls asleep, right? And that kind of resets everything. That's about as drastic as it gets. Okay, so suckling also maintains the secretion of prolactin, which then maintains the glandular tissue so that it can produce milk. Okay, so here's another positive feedback mechanism. Okay. All right, so I promised some people I would talk about the male sexual response. So let's see what we have right here. I want to end show. All right, so how many divisions of the autonomic nervous system are there? Yeah, there are two, right? And you know them to be sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, Okay. And male sexual response can be broken down into erection and ejaculation. One is going to be controlled by one autonomic nervous system and the other by the other part of the autonomic nervous system. All right, so let's see what we have right here. Okay, so here we have a smooth muscle cell, okay, in erectile tissue of the penis, or arterioles that supply blood to the erectile tissue in the penis. And what kind of erectile tissue are you aware of? Spongiosum and cavernosa. Yeah, there's two of them, cavernosa. Okay, and so the erection happens when these tissues fill up with blood, right, at arterial pressure. What's the pressure in an artery? In an artery. Yeah, 120 over 80. That's high pressure. Right? That's relatively high pressure. If that pressure enters the sinuses of the cavernosa and spongiosum, that produces an erection. So how does this blood enter the penis? Right? So here are a couple parasympathetic nerves. And these parasympathetic nerves, one can release acetylcholine. Oh, I gotta zoom in so I can see what's going on right here. Okay, so one releases acetylcholine. Okay, that acetylcholine opens up a pathway that converts an amino acid, arginine, combines with oxygen to produce nitric oxide. Right? And nitric oxide is an important, well, we should consider it a neurotransmitter. Right, so this happens in just a vascular endothelial cell. This is just a cell that lines the blood vessels going through the erectile tissue in the penis. Right, and here is another parasympathetic axon that releases nitric oxide directly when an action potential comes down. That nitric oxide now doesn't enter the endothelial cell, but now this is a smooth muscle cell, right, of the vasculature. And here we have GTP. GTP can be converted into cyclic GMP, and you should know the name of an enzyme that can make these cyclic nucleotides. Like what makes a cyclic AMP? Yeah, adenylate cyclase, right? And so this one right here is going to be guanylate cyclase. And so guanylate cyclase is activated. That's going to convert GTP to cyclic GMP. Cyclic GMP, right, can bind to a calcium channel, and it's going to cause closing of this calcium channel. So when the calcium channel closes, what happens to the cell? Does it stay at resting membrane potential? Does it depolarize or hyperpolarize when we close this calcium channel? Okay, let's think about that. Where is calcium at a high concentration, inside or outside the cell? It's high outside the cell. So when this channel is open, where does calcium go? It enters the cell, and calcium can be a second messenger inside the cell, but it also, what, is depolarizing, just like when sodium enters the cell, that's depolarizing. And what is that? Is that excitatory or inhibitory? That's excitatory, right? So when a cell depolarizes. So when these nerve impulses come down, okay, and produces cyclic GMP that closes this calcium channel, so what happens to this cell? Is it excited or is it inhibited? It's inhibited because calcium can't get in. If it's inhibited, what's going to happen to contraction? It's going to relax. Okay, and so this is a sphincter muscle. When it relaxes, right, it increases the diameter of blood vessels going to the penis. So what happens? More blood or less blood going into the sinuses? More blood, which causes erection. Okay, all right, so cyclic GMP causes erection by causing relaxation of this smooth muscle cell, right, and that causes engorgement of erectile tissues that maintains erection. And what division of the autonomic nervous system does that? Yeah, it's the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. Well, there is such a thing as erectile dysfunction. There are some pharmaceutical agents that can help alleviate that particular condition. And it would do so by what? Contracting the smooth muscle cell or helping it to relax? That's right. Relaxation produces what? Erection. All right, so how are you going to mess with this system right here? Well, what is the antagonist to adenylate and guanylate cyclase? It is a kinase phosphorylate something. That's pretty good. We're looking at, we want to look at something that's going to degrade the cyclic GMP or cyclic AMP. We used it for the visual system. That was a phosphodiesterase. Phosphodiesterase, right? So phosphodiesterase is antagonistic to guanylate cyclase. And here is a compound, okay, Viagra. And Viagra inhibits this phosphodiesterase, which is always working. Okay, phosphodiesterase is inhibited. So what happens to cyclic GMP when phosphodiesterase is inhibited? Sorry, there's a lot of double negatives right here. Okay, so what happens to, with Viagra, what happens to cyclic GMP levels? It increases. Okay, cyclic GMP increases. And what happens to these calcium channels? They close, right, which does what? It hyperpolarizes the cell, causes relaxation of this muscle, which produces erection. All right, so that's the basis of basically all the erectile dysfunction pharmaceutical agents. It inhibits phosphodiesterase. All right, so I think, did we have a question in here regarding some of this stuff? Well, I think there was. That's why I got into this. Where? I think there was one. I'm sure there was one. Okay, you got a number? Number. Oh, it's an online question? Yeah, read it out loud once.
Viagra is effective in treating erectile dysfunction because this drug will A, increase the activity of cyclic GMP phosphatase in the smooth muscle cells of the penile blood vessels, B, convert nitric oxide, C, decrease the amount of cyclic AMP in the smooth muscle cells of the penile blood vessels, or D, decrease the amount of cyclic GMP in the smooth muscle cells of the penile blood vessels.
Okay. Oh, no, it should be the last one.
Yeah,
it was
A on that.
Okay, what was A? How did they get confused?
Well, it doesn't match that. It increases the activity of cyclic GMP, phosphodiesterase, and smooth muscle cells of the penile blood vessel.
Does it deactivate? Well, no, actually what it does is that it what? It enhances the activity in a sense because it reduces the inhibition on phosphodiesterase. So I don't like A.
So it increases the amount, not the activity?
Increases the amount. It increases the amount of cyclic GMP.
There's no increase option.
There's no
increase? No. It's either you have decreased the activity of cyclic GMP or decreased the amount of cyclic GMP.
It increases the amount of cyclic GMP.
Increases the amount?
Yeah, that's for erection. Increases the amount.
Yeah, the right answer would be wrong.
Hmm. Okay. Good questions if you got to figure it out.
Decrease the amount of cyclic GMP.
Decrease the amount of cyclic GMP. Yeah, no, it's got to increase.
Oh, it's, you said increase.
Yeah, Viagra increases the amount of cyclic GMP, which hyperpolarizes the cell. Yeah, and that's not an exam figure either. That should be a good exam figure. Well, maybe next time.
Yeah.
Okay, so erection. Right, controlled by hypothalamus, right, via and also the sacral region. So there are some reflexes can occur by two different things: conscious thought working through the hypothalamus down through the spinal cord to the penis, right, or sensory stimulation on the penis going to the spinal cord, right, causing erection. So both of those things take place. All right, so parasympathetic nervous system is for erection. Okay, and here is a circumstance where the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system are not exactly antagonistic to each other. All right, so what does the sympathetic nervous system do? Okay, it controls ejaculation. It causes contraction of smooth muscles in the tubules of the seminal vesicles, prostate, muscles at the base of the penis, which are involved with ejaculation. So this is what we call a cooperative effect of the autonomic nervous system, of the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. Okay. And I forget if I was going to mention anything else. I think that's pretty much, we looked at birth control pills, parturition. Here's the very last one in my book. I don't know if you have this question. It goes, which of the following statements about progesterone is false? Do you have this one in your book? False? Progesterone is secreted by the corpus luteum. You should all say yes, for sure. Progesterone is secreted by the placenta. And that is true, but when from the placenta? After 10 weeks, that's right. Did we look at that one already. Yeah, basal body temperature. Okay. Which of the following statements regarding spermatogenesis is false? I might not know this one. Testosterone stimulates spermatogenesis. Spermatogenesis? Yeah, because it works on the Sertoli cells, right? Chromatin becomes highly compacted as protamines replace histone proteins? I have no idea. You don't have that one. You don't have this question.
No.
Okay. Okay, that won't be on the test. Sertoli cells engulf cytoplasm by phagocytosis. This is true. FSH is required for spermatogenesis to occur. This is true. So the long answer is the false one for some reason. It usually doesn't go that way. Let me look at all the rest of these slides. Okay, so in the absence of androgens during development, what secondary sex structures will be produced in the absence of androgens, male or female? It'll be female, right? In order to have male ducts produced, you need androgens. Otherwise, right, females are produced. Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to say to reinforce your questions at the end of the chapter. So, let's open it up for questions. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
On the simple quiz.
Oh, simple quiz, yeah? Yeah. Okay, you're going to have to say that one more time. Just the last part. Human chorionic gonadotropin is essential.
Essential to the pregnancy to prevent miscarriage.
Oh, I think that's important. Yeah, human chorionic gonadotropin is important to prevent miscarriage. Yeah, because it's a signal that goes from the placenta to the corpus luteum. It signals the corpus luteum to secrete progesterone, which maintains... Oh, it's a true-false?
Yeah, it says false in mine.
So far what I heard, I like true. I like true. Human chorionic gonadotropin?
Or no.
Without human chorionic gonadotropin, implantation cannot be maintained. How does this... whole pregnancy. It's not necessarily through the whole pregnancy because after 10 weeks, the placenta takes over, right?
Yeah.
Placenta secretes progesterone by itself. It kind of is a good reinforcement if it relates to some questions that are in the end of the chapter, if it helps you understand those questions, then it's good. Okay. Yeah. Yes, another one. Okay, yeah.
Prevent female from ovulation and men to age.
I would say false. True for the first part, false for the second part. Because in the second part, right in the luteal phase, a woman is taking a placebo. So estrogen and progesterone drop, and that's the signal for menstruation. That's it?
Another one.
One more.
The placenta secretes chorionic somatotropin.
Oh, somatotropin. Okay, yeah. Chorionic somatotropin.
Maintain the endometrium during pregnancy.
False. There, I have a slide here. I can't show you. Do you have another question while I look?
I have one on a different chapter.
Okay.
So the first one is, an increased plasma sodium concentration indirectly stimulates the secretion of aldosterone from the adrenal cortex by increasing renin secretion from the adrenal gland
Okay. try it again. Well, now that I know what you're talking about, I might be able to follow it. Try it again.
Okay, so
we're talking about sodium.
An increased plasma sodium concentration indirectly stimulates the secretion of aldosterone from the adrenal cortex by increasing renin secretion from the juxtaglomerular apparatus to the pulse.
Okay. What I would just break down, what is the action of aldosterone in terms of sodium and potassium? Sodium is going to go from filtrate back into the body.
Right.
Okay. Potassium is going to go the opposite way. It's going to be secreted. All right. So if aldosterone is for increasing resorption of sodium, what was the stimulus? Increased sodium?
Yes.
So if it's increased sodium as a stimulus, then aldosterone would decrease.
Yes.
So I like false for that answer.
I know.
Okay. What does your...
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad you guys are... But it's relatively easy to figure out. Just remember first that sodium and potassium go in opposite directions. Aldosterone is for resorption, but secretion of potassium.
And I have another question.
Yeah.
On the chapter 14, on the mobile choice 11, I know it's a correction, but I don't know why.
Okay. Okay, what is bradycardia? You got to know what bradycardia is first. So cardia has something to do with the heart, and bradycardia means slow heart rate. Okay, so we got decreased heart rate for endurance trained athletes. And athletes should have the same blood pressure as we do. They shouldn't be hypotensive or hypertensive. Right, so what controls blood pressure? What's blood pressure equal to? Blood flow is what? Pressure divided by resistance. Blood flow through blood vessel. That's a blood vessel. What's blood flow through the heart? That's cardiac output, which is what? Stroke volume times heart rate. These things have to be equal to each other, which means what? Pressure is going to be equal to stroke volume times heart rate times resistance. We'll just call that total peripheral resistance. Okay, and we said that we have an athlete that's trained, and an athlete that is trained has a decreased heart rate, but they should have the same pressure. And why is that? So if their heart rate decreases, right, if heart rate decreases, what happens to pressure? Everything else is held constant. Pressure decreases, right? But if athletes have a slow heart rate, what can explain that? Well, their heart, right, their stroke volume actually goes up. Right, so increased stroke volume, and if pressure is going to stay the same, so we're going to constant pressure, if stroke volume goes up, what has to happen with one of these two terms? They have to decrease. So in this particular case, we saw a decrease in heart rate, or what, a bradycardia, times total peripheral resistance stays the same. So these two terms cancel out for an endurance-trained athlete because stroke volume goes up. So that question is a little strange because it says what? It asks about It asks about bradycardia. It says bradycardia is caused by that, or this is caused by... Oh, it says this is caused by that, but it's really the other way around. Okay, the heart rate, the bradycardia is caused by an increased stroke volume. Because when somebody is a trained athlete, they have a stronger heart, but they have more blood volume. They have more blood volume, which then increases venous return to the heart. It stretches the heart. So what happens to the heart when it starts to stretch out? Yeah, contractility goes up, right? Because of what law? The Frank-Starling law. So that increases the stroke volume. So to compensate, their heart rate decreases, right? But it's mostly effect of blood volume in a trained athlete. Yeah. Yep. Even at rest.
Another question.
Okay.
On chapter 16, the respiratory number on the...
What's 16?
Respiratory.
Respiratory, okay. Okay.
On a simple quick, on the number 14, hypoventilation,
is this a true false? Okay, so we're looking at ventilation.
Yeah. Hypoventilation.
So ventilation, is it increasing or decreasing? Hyper.
Hypo.
So ventilation is decreasing. Right? Ventilation is decreasing. What happens to CO2 then when you decrease ventilation inside your body? Yeah, so CO2 increases. What do we call that? I think it said in the question. Hyperkalemia? Hypercapnia. Hypercapnia. And then you want to know what happens to pH? Yeah, that's pH. Okay. Okay, well, what can you tell me about the CO2? CO2 plus water goes to H2, C3, which goes to H plus HCO3, that's bicarbonate, here's a hydrogen ion. So as you decrease ventilation, what happens to hydrogen ion concentration? It increases, and what do we call that? An alkalosis or acidosis? Acidosis, does that answer your question? Okay, and probably more importantly, you should know the name of this enzyme right here. Carbonic anhydrase. Yeah, I'm glad you didn't say phosphodiesterase. That's important, but not in this particular case. Yeah?
This was on a renal physiology class again. It's a question that has multiple answers. So it says, within the proximal convoluted tubule, and the two answers it gives is one, the majority of glucose is really stored.
Yes?
Or bicarbonate and the substrate is converted to carbon dioxide and water by the reaction of carbonic anhydrase.
I'm not sure I followed the carbonic anhydrase one. Is it true false?
No.
Those are the two answers.
Oh. Those are true.
Both of them?
Yeah.
So during the same question.
Is it wrong because it says the majority of the glucose is reabsorbed? It should be all.
It should be all in
the same. Oh, that could be a nitpick there. Yeah. That could be. It should be all.
So E is the better one?
Yeah.
Unless you say it would say all, then it would be the glucose.
Yeah. Okay, so if you increase ventilation, what's going to happen to your acid-base balance? So CO2 is going to go down. Okay, and if CO2 goes down, then we got CO2 plus H2O, but now what about this arrow? It's going to go that way. Okay, and what about carbonic acid? It's going to go this way. And what's going to happen to this hydrogen ion and bicarbonate? Yeah. So what do you call a decrease? Yeah, and since this is due to ventilation, we call that a respiratory alkalosis. Due to what enzyme? Carbonic anhydrase. Yeah. Rent, go look at Andromeda Strain. That's a science fiction movie. Okay, you have it. Andromeda Strain, you've never heard of this. Oh my goodness. Okay. It's not that old of a movie. It's a science fiction movie. Well, anyway, a meteorite struck a satellite. The satellite was recovered because it was doing some kind of experiment, and they brought the satellite back, but it had this little meteorite. The meteorite had some virus in it. Okay. You saw this one? And the virus was just wiping everybody out except for two people. One was a newborn infant. Of course, the virus killed the mom. So what happens to an infant when mom's not around? It starts crying, right? Starts crying, hyperventilating, and it took them, this is the whole point of the movie. So the infant was crying, hyperventilating, right? And what kind of condition did that produce in the infant? An alkalosis, and that alkalosis helped protect the infant from that particular infection. So by adjusting acid-base balance, right, they were able to counteract this extraterrestrial virus. So it's sort of a cool movie, sort of cool.
And one more random question.
Okay.
It's a multiple answer question again. This is, which statement about the extraterrestrial apparatus is correct? And one answer is the granules of the extraterrestrial material are sensitive to renal blood flow, and the other one is the role of the macular contribution of the distal column material to secrete the enzyme renin.
Granular cells secrete renin, not the macula densa. Okay. Yes.
So, it's like indirectly?
Indirectly, yeah. They're related to each other. But it's the granular cells that release renin. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure I could follow everybody's thought there. But just remember, granular cells secrete renin. Okay? Yeah.
Okay, so is that a better option, better chance for the role of the macula densa region to secrete renin?
Oh, macula densa cells do not secrete renin.
Not directly, but they indirectly.
They don't secrete
so
renin.
Acting as blood flow and
barotrophic. I like that one.
I have a question about this. On the finger 16.35, we call the low partial of oxygen. So we have the less OC hemoglobin, and we have the less inhibition of 2,3-DPG reaction.
Okay, so what happens to 2,3-DPG?
It increases.
But why they just have less and then they increase it right away? Why?
Well, because when there's decreased oxygen pressure, okay, then red blood cells produce more 2,3-DPG. And when more 2,3-DPG is there, it affects the oxygen saturation curve. And it shifts it to the right. What does that do to, when the oxygen saturation curve is shifted to the right, what does that do to oxygen delivery to tissues? It increases. It should increase unloading, which is a right shift. Right shift. Yeah, right shift causes increased oxygen unloading in tissues. Yeah, left causes a decrease. Okay. Okay. And that can happen relatively quickly. Just remember, right shift causes increased oxygen unloading. So what else causes a right shift? Decrease in pH causes a right shift. And what about temperature? An increase in temperature causes a right shift, which increases oxygen unloading. Increasing temperature, decreasing pH, which is what? Increasing acidity, right? Increase in 2,3-DPG, which is a decrease in oxygen. Yeah, because at the peak, it's mostly 100% no matter what, even though it's right shifted. But if it's right shifted, it just releases a lot more. Yeah. Right shift. Okay, sign-in sheet is going around. I'll try to start the test as soon as possible on Thursday.